we were not gonna pass you again.
Lawson.
Yes, sir.
Let's go, man.
Yes, sir.
Dude, I'm telling you, we've been excited about this. I thought we lost you when we moved up, and I'm excited to get you here. We're excited to get you here. We got a heck of a foundation growing, man. It's gonna be fun. Feel me?
Yes, sir. I can't wait.
All gas, brother. Let's roll, man. Hey, I'm.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPaul11 on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram. Quick little segment here before we get into the Lindsey Jones interview of The Athletic and president of the Pro Football Writers Association. Jameson Crowder today, we'll talk about it in the pod a little bit, but officially the Jets are going to restructure Jameson Crowder's contract. I broke it down for you a little bit last pod on some of the options they went with, and I thought the most likely option is exactly what happened. I've been talking about this for a little while now, and I just think it was the best thing for both parties that the Jets can restructure, get some cap space available, especially in a position where they are pretty deep, and then they're able to now allocate some of that money. Maybe it's a Morgan Moses. Maybe it's a backup quarterback like Nick Foles. It's a corner like a Richard Sherman, Steven Nelson, Brian Poole, and then carry some cap space over and potentially Marcus May extension. But all those things go into it. The Jets are going to have, retain Jameson Crowder, who's been in their best offensive player for the last couple of years, a guy that is obviously replaceable, but is a guy that's, still an added addition, will be great for Elijah Moore, will be great for Braxton Berrios, Denzel Mims, Corey Davis' young receiving core. And he'll get to enter free agency at age 28 and get one bigger deal before he gets over 30. We'll get into the interview with Lindsey Jones right now. Just wanted to give that update. I think it's a good move on both parts. The Joe Douglas has continued to show he's ruthless in his aggression, towards getting contracts done. He's been, strong in that sense. He's not overpaid guys. He's been able to restructure both Alex Lewis and Jameson Crowder this offseason. He's been able to get rid of other contracts like Le'Veon Bell, obviously is one, Henry Anderson, and other guys that come to mind. A lot kind of going on here, but I think the Jets made the right move today in restructuring Jameson Crowder. He'll be a free agent in 2022. The Jets will get him in a number. I expect to see that number coming in around $6 to $7 million, probably mostly fully guaranteed with incentives. We'll get into this interview. Lindsey's great, and I think you guys are going to really enjoy.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPaul11 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Joined by a very special guest today, The Athletic, Lindsey Jones, by Lindsey Jones on Twitter, The Athletic NFL Show. She's joined by Robert Mace as well on that show, who we've had on the pod before. And she got a couple of big pieces coming out, one of vaccines and in the NFL, things like that. Lindsey, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Well, thanks for having me.
Excited to have you on. Obviously, kind of in that interesting period in the NFL schedule where there's always news, but at least for right now, it's slightly less hectic than it's been the last couple months and before we get into training camp. But how's kind of everything been now integrating back into, it's going to be like a normal season again?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it'll be a normal season. I think the one thing that we didn't mention, I guess I should have told you this before. So I'm also the president of the Pro Football Writers of America, which is the NFL Writers Association, basically.
Glauber.
With Bob Glauber, who New York legend Bob Glauber, who just won our Career Achievement Award. That was really, really fun because we got to kind of prank him. We got to pull off a big surprise, which was the highlight of my week by far. So part of my PFWA responsibilities right now is, really just, I want to say it's negotiating, but we don't technically have a seat at the table. So it's just a lot of conversations about what 2021 is going to look like and what it's going to mean for media access. So I'm doing a ton of reporting for my regular job, but I feel like I'm spending, 15 or 20 hours a week these days talking to people with teams and the league and the Players Association just about, trying to get back to normal because we're, while I have appreciated how familiar we all are now with Zoom and it makes things like this possible where, we can do podcasts like this and actually see each other and, you can reach out to more people. For reporting purposes, I'm super ready to just get back and actually speaking to players and coaches and staff members in person as quickly as possible and hopefully in the locker room.
If you guys haven't seen the Bob Glauber thing, it's pretty awesome. He's one of the first guests of the podcast.
Went
to high school with my dad and whatever. So it's pretty awesome.
You can legitimately say that you have been reading Bob
my entire
life. You grew up reading Bob, which a lot of us, we all joke, it's kind of like a fun running joke, but like you legit have been reading him.
Yeah, no, it's funny. You're talking about like the 90s came on. And I was like, I was 4 years old. That was like the first like team I remember watching. He was like, yeah, I was in the peak of my career. Like I was like entering the peak of my career. It's just funny to think about. But no, I think everyone kind of was hoping, even if you notice a lot of the NBA games right now, the playoffs, the ones with the Nationals in the stadium, the energy is just so different. You know, the feed off the crowd, not have to watch the game where they're watching the exact same thing we are. I think it's it'll be a nice refresher, especially in the NFL when crowds
and we just want to be able to know more about what's going on. I mean, these kind of the Zoom press conferences are just so just like impersonal, you know, and you can't actually have a conversation where you can ask follow-up questions. And so much of like the good stuff where you like really learn, especially in game days, like where you really learn what happened in a game is what happens when it's not that tape recorders are off, but it's not a group of cameras. It's where you can, you know, you can stand there with a cornerback and say like, okay, well, what was the coverage there on third down? And like, who had what responsibility? And like, take me through what that, you know, or it's a receiver, take me through that route. What was the call? You know, what defensive coverage were they playing you with? Like, you can get into that stuff that you just can't get on Zoom, where you can get really into like, and those are some of my favorite stories to generally write on a Sunday is when you're covering a game is like you take one specific play and you get the, you know, 8 or 10 guys about that exact play from both sides. And you just can't do that kind of stuff over Zoom. So we're just really hoping that, you know, by this fall, because it's not really about like us, you know, like I like having that access. It helps me do my job better. But if I'm doing my job better, the people who benefit are the fans of the teams, right? That you're getting the information that, you know, you need and you want. And, you know, the benefit of having a credential is being able to get that stuff that you don't see when you're just watching the game on television. So hopefully we can get back there so we can get the fans of these teams and the fans of the NFL, kind of the really inside info that you guys are, you know, have been used to having for so long.
I know. I'm excited for 2021 as thinking the season as a whole, being in the stadiums, whether it's media availability, whether it's the fans, tailgating, all those types of things. One person I think everybody's very excited to watch play football this fall is Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
For whether you're a Jets fan, you hate the Jets, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's, you know, he's an exciting, polarizing prospect. Couple questions for you. One, what was your take as, you know, him coming out? Do you think like Jets made the right pick? Obviously, it's too early to tell if he's actually right.
Yeah.
What has been the vibe that you've got, you know, watching some of these clips people posted all over the internet already so far of Zach Wilson during OTAs?
Yeah, I mean, he was just such like a clean prospect. Like, this was such an interesting draft class because there were so many really good quarterbacks. And Zach Wilson was probably the guy that we talked about least of that whole group. Trevor Lawrence was probably the least talked about, least buzzy number one overall pick because it was just so clear that he was going to be the number one overall pick. And there wasn't really, you couldn't really nitpick anything with his game. But then when the Niners made that trade up to 3, all of the focus shifted to what was going to happen with the Niners because we knew that Trevor Lawrence was going number one. And then it became pretty clear that, you know, while I think maybe there was some room for debate of like, was Zach Wilson really the second best quarterback in this class? And time is ultimately going to tell that. It was very clear that Zach Wilson was the guy that the Jets wanted. And that's what ultimately mattered, right? When we were talking about all the speculation about this draft class and stuff. So, and, you know, kind of like similarly with Trevor Lawrence, like there just wasn't a ton to like rip apart about Zach Wilson. Like there were no character concerns. There was no questions about like what sort of leader he would be or how he would fit in a locker room. There was not a ton of questions about like scheme fit or like, you know, having a limited skill set. You just look at him and he is, you know, kind of the prototypical modern quarterback where he's got everything. He can make every single throw. He's got all of the tools. You know, he's mobile because you have to be mobile now if you want to be a quarterback in the NFL. It's so rare now to find the like, oh, he's just a prototypical pocket passer. Like that's almost like a detriment now as a prospect. So there just wasn't a ton to like brag on him about. Like okay, this kid, he's ready. He's going to play in the NFL. So it's going to be kind of fun to watch his development. And it's probably not going to be super seamless. Like there are going to be rough days. You know, I think mini camp this last week has been really interesting to watch. And, you know, look, Jets fans have been through this. Like you guys know the drill with, you know, rookie quarterbacks coming in and quarterback competitions and kind of this drill of you know, that there will be rough days. But it was a good reminder where it was like, I think what Tuesday was the day where he was just like lights out, like the first day of minicamp. And it was like, oh my God, Zach Wilson is the truth, you know? And then the next day he goes out and it's like, it's a rocky day. And then Thursday was kind of back in the middle, and that's what's going to happen. And when training camp happens, the one thing I want to stress is to not get too high over the really good days, because there are going to be days where he looks really good and he's going to make those throws that remind you, say, oh yeah, this is why we wanted this kid. This is why the Jets stayed put at number two. And this is why they traded Sam Darnold. It's because this kid has it, you know? So don't get too high over those days. And then also don't get too low on the days where he throws five picks in a training camp practice. And certainly not in a mini camp practice too, because, you know, right now this is the time they're trying a lot of stuff. They're going through a ton of install and trying to figure out exactly what their offense is going to look like. New offensive coordinator, first time offense coordinator in Mike LaFleur. I always get my LaFleurs mixed. So does Mike LaFleur.
I think everybody does.
I know. I'm like, even though it's, you know, even that Matt LaFleur has been in the NFC championship game 2 years in a row, I still get my Matt and Mike confused. But yeah, first time offensive coordinator, first time play caller, rookie quarterback. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. There's going to be a lot of growing pains, right? But what you want to see is his mental processing. How quickly is he learning when he does make mistakes, when he does have that practice in training camp, and you guys are all at, you know, when they open it up, it's at Florham Park and there's fans there and everybody's recording everything. When he does have that bad day and he throws a few picks, why did he throw those picks? Was it a pick that got, you know, deflected and tipped up in the air, or it bounces off the receiver's hands, which it seemed like they had some drop issues earlier this week. But yeah, was it a deflected interception? Was it a really bad decision? Is he sailing balls over the middle? Is it because he has poor footwork? That context is important. If they're, you know, kind of the fluky interceptions, you can live with that. If there are poor decisions, you know, or bad fundamentals, then those are red flags. But we're way too early to get into that. But I just want to caution everybody to not get crazy worked up when you see like the stat lines from mini camp or training camp where it's like, oh, he was 7 of 25 with 3 interceptions. Like, oh my God, he's terrible. Or the days that he's 10 for 10 with 3 touchdowns, like he's probably somewhere in the middle. But, you know, sure. I think he's an exciting prospect. You know, I'm really looking forward to kind of watching him develop. And I'm also just kind of like the 2018 class, where I'm just excited to kind of watch this group together. And we're going to have fun comparing them forever, you know, the way that their careers go and, you know, how quickly they're able to, you know, really make an impact with their franchises. Because a couple of them have landed places where complete overhauls, a couple of these guys might not play right away. But you know, I think it's other stuff we're going to talk about. I think the Jets are in a position where they're kind of trying to do this the right way and set Zach Wilson up to have success, if not immediately, you know, here in 2021, building this right where, you know, they're not going to be looking to draft another quarterback in 3 years like they were a couple years ago.
Let's hold on. No, yeah. I agree with you. I think the biggest thing with Wilson that I've seen so far that I want to continue to see is just, can he, every time he makes a mistake, can he kind of get that out of his head right away and move on in a similar fashion? Compared it to, you know, if he's a star pitcher and he gives up one solo home run, the game's not over. Like, move on. You don't need to now walk the next three guys. My issue is for the Jets has been, as much as I defend Sam all the time, you know, he didn't do a great job that. Like, he would make a mistake and then it would kind of steamroll into like 2 or 3 mistakes. And then Sanchez was the same thing. Gino, all these guys, it felt like they could go 8 of 8 to open the game, and then boom, one fumble, one interception, one bad pass. All of a sudden, now they're 8 of 17 with 2 picks, and the game's over. You just don't want to see that. You want to see the mental toughness to, it's not about like being a tough person and taking a hit from you. It's like being tough enough to know you can make mistakes. Everyone makes, Tom Brady threw 3 interceptions in 1/2 of an NFC title game. For him, it's out of his head, and boom, the next play moves on. Obviously, Zach Wilson's not Tom Brady. It's just the concept that the best guys move on right away. And the guys that can't move on can't ever really get to that next level. But no, I agree with you. I think you got to temper expectations. You can be excited while also being like, he hasn't even put on pads yet, and not all the vets are even there. So like, let's not get too crazy yet. But no, I'm excited about him. In terms of, you know, another guy that obviously the Jets brought in, he's more, almost the most, as important, if not more important, as Zach Wilson's Robert Saleh, obviously. I know, you know, you're in the Denver area. San Francisco's a little further, but at least you guys, you know, on the West Coast, obviously catch more of the Niners on a weekly basis. What were your impressions? Did you think the Jets would make a hire like that and be like, how successful do you think he could be? Because everyone, I don't think I've heard one person say a bad thing about Saleh in the last 9 months or 8 months.
Yeah. There. I mean, I was really curious, like which direction they were going to go with that hire, because I think we all knew, I mean, probably dating back to this time last year, that they were probably going to be in a position that they were going to be making a head coaching change heading into 2021. So, you know, it's not rare for teams to hire the opposite of the guy that they just fired, but the trend is to hire, especially if you have a new quarterback, is to hire the guy who is the offensive head coach, the offensive mind. You hire the guy
where offense is going.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you hire the guy with the quarterback in mind. And the Jets kind of went the opposite direction. The Jets kind of decided, like, we're going to bring in maybe he was the best defensive minded head coach that they thought was out there this cycle, which has worked and can work for sure. But, you know, it definitely screamed to me like we just need to go personality wise as far from Adam Gase as possible. I don't love it when it's like, okay, we're going to bring in just like this culture changer head coach. But I think Robert Saleh is kind of that guy too. But I don't want to get lost in the like personality driven stuff and about like the way that he's going to run this building and the way that people are going to respect him and the relationships he's going to build. I don't want it to get lost of how good of a defensive coach he is. And he got a ton of praise in 2019, and rightfully so, because of the defense that he coordinated for the Niners when they were the best defense in the league almost the entire year. Their front seven was so good. Their pass rush was completely dominant. He did a better job last year when they were decimated by injuries, where he really had to be like scheming stuff up every week and getting the most out of guys that a lot of us had never really heard of before, because it wasn't Nick Bosa and DeForest Buckner was gone and Richard Sherman was on IR for half of the year. So he really had to kind of, you know, lean into his coaching skills and his motivational skills and his ability to, you know, scheme things up, you know, do creative coverages and stuff that was going to make them successful. And like, look, the Niners did have a step back last year for a lot of reasons, but it wasn't because of Robert Saleh's coaching. So I think if anything, you know, he probably should have gotten a job after 2019, and the fact that they were in the Super Bowl really hurt his ability to interview for jobs and kind of really be in that rotation. But it was like a no-brainer that he was going to get a job this cycle. And he ended up, I think, in a really good spot where, you know, I hope they're going to be patient with him, you know, more patient than they were with Adam Gase, but I don't think Adam necessarily deserved a lot more patience. I mean, he was a second time head coach. I think it was maybe probably not the best hire to begin with a couple of years ago when they moved on and hired Adam Gase. And I say this as somebody who has covered Adam for a very long time and personally like have a good relationship with Adam. We've known each other because I live in Denver. So I've known him since he came in as a wide receivers coach, I think in 2009. So like, you know, I've known him and covered him a really, really long time, but it just was not the right spot for him. It was not the right job at the right, none of it was right. So it just, you know, just kind of has felt like, okay, this makes sense. Like this is a good fit. You know, I think he's made some really smart hires in the way that he's built his staff. And then, you know, I think you can be excited about him, but then the other reasons that I think I'm optimistic about the Jets is more so the 2 years now of a track record of what Joe Douglas has done and the different moves that they've made, the way that they've spent their money. I think you can maybe sometimes question the value, you know, the value of trading up again in the first round. Like maybe the value wasn't the best, but I don't think you can argue with the player that they got. You can look at some of the free agency contracts where it's like, okay, maybe that is a lot of money for Corey Davis, or that is a lot of money for Carl Lawson. But like, those are really good players. And when you've been a bad team for as long as the Jets have, you got to get really good players. And sometimes you have to maybe overpay a little bit, and they had money to spend. So it's not like they were one of these teams that was like sitting right up at the cap and they had no cash. Like they had cap space, they had cash.
The Jets always have cash. That's part of the problem.
Exactly. And, so, and they went out and got the best players that they could with the resources that they had available. So, I mean, I think it's been a pretty strong offseason. I think it's maybe now been two fairly strong off seasons in a row in terms of acquisitions. And that's, you know, that's what you want to do if you got to, you know, if things were pretty much torn down and you got to rebuild it. It's all about just spending the money you have to get the best players you can.
Yeah, no, the solid thing is, for me, it's like, it's a great fit. And I think anytime you come in, you follow up something that had, like, went so wrong so quickly, in terms of that whole regime, just the whole McKagan thing and everything with Gase just did not click the right way. When you bring in a guy that's all positive energy, all excitement, like, I mean, I think as fans, sometimes people overreact to how, you know, they're all at the Islanders game and that, you know, the whole team's, you know, crushing beers and Dan Feeney and the whole thing, which is super exciting. But I think there is something to that. And I think when you're not a good football team and you start to have this, they've been, I mean, the season's been over by October for 2 years in a row. And it's been like, you know, we talk about how good, you mentioned Salah's coaching performance this year based on, you know, the amount of injuries and being able to kind of out scheme some of the lack of talent. It felt like the Jets kind of did the opposite. Like, if the guy got hurt, it was like, oh, the game's over. They can't win this week. And I think that's something that's super imperative for them going forward. If, you know, even if their roster, they don't have the best roster in the league, they have the worst roster in their own division, just in talent, you know, so far, obviously, it'll continue to get better. But, you know, you want to have somebody that's going to elevate you, not, you know, and be able to kind of endure crisis and you know, make the best of it. But, you know, kind of transitioning to that, where do you, I guess this is not the easiest question because you don't know who's going to be injured, who's not, you know, what other moves can be made. But what's like a realistic expectation for Jets fans going into 2021? Is it, I've heard people say, you know, Kyle came on the show and said the Jets need to make, they should make the playoffs and they should be a 9-win team. And I've had other people come on and say if they win 5 games, it's a huge success. Like, is it somewhere in the middle? Should they have an expectation of, like, they have an easy schedule and they should win 9 games? I feel like it's probably somewhere in the middle. Am I wrong?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I would go quite that. I don't know if I should go quite that far.
I think Kyle's trying
to
get them fired up, in fairness.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, maybe that is like that, the ceiling, you know, the ceiling right there, just because when you have a rookie quarterback, it's so hard to predict exactly like how it's going to go. But yeah, I mean, I think the floor is now significantly higher than it was. So I don't think this is like a 2-win kind of team. You know, this should not be a team that we're talking about being in contention for the number one overall pick in the draft. If that happens, something has gone terribly, terribly wrong.
I hear a Spencer Wilson Rattler comment at any point from a Jets fan this year, I think I'm
wrong. Yeah, I mean, if that is happening, it means that something is really, really wrong with Zach Wilson. Not necessarily with like the way he's playing, but like something has gone really wrong. Like similarly with like what happened with the Bengals last year, where, you know, Joe Burrow tears his ACL and he's out for most of the year and they're a bad team. And so much of the Bengals' trajectory is tied directly to Joe Burrow. So, you know, I think they're, you know, I don't think they're in that mix of playoff teams. I don't think they're there yet. I think this is kind of a long, it's going to be a long process. I think there have been a lot of roster issues that they're going to have to address. There's a lot of like learning how to win kind of stuff. There, you know, a lot of defensive issues that Robert Saleh is going to have to deal with. But you look at now who some of the players are. I mean, I think there's some very significant upgrades at some really important positions. Carl Lawson is the guy that I keep coming back to, but I mean, he was like one of the best free agents available this year. And I think he's super underrated because he played in Cincinnati. So he didn't get a ton of national attention, but he can be the perfect type of pass rusher that Saleh needs. When sometimes you just need like a guy to go out there and get up to the quarterback and make one play and get you that third down stop. Like Carl Lawson is that kind of just get him, let him go. Right. You know, where you're not having to manufacture different types of pass rush. You're not having to like, you know, rely, you know, live by the blitz and just do weird stuff. Like you have a guy who's going to be able to win like his reps most of the time. So I really liked that signing. I do think the tough thing about where the Jets are right now is that the Bills are probably the second best team in the AFC right now. And that's not just because they made the AFC championship game. I'm not just saying that because that's where they finished last year. But I think when you look at their roster top to bottom, the way that their quarterback has been ascending, the consistency that they have on their coaching staff, from Sean McDermott to Brian Daboll not getting a job last year or not getting a head coaching job this year. So he's still there and he did such impressive work with Josh Allen last year. So I think the gap, you're starting at, you know, a pretty rough spot where you have a lot of ground to make up with the Bills. All of a sudden, you know, the Patriots are going to be better this year. I mean, I just think that they're not, I don't know how many down years a Bill Belichick led team, especially when he was very realistic about what happened last year and very clearly was like, all right, well, we're going to fix that. Our roster was terrible. We had nobody who could catch the ball. I'm going to sign 18 tight ends in free agency. And they go out and, you know, make some moves like that. The Dolphins are really curious because I kind of look at them similarly, like maybe they're just a year or two ahead of where the Jets are in terms of trying to do this smart rebuild, bringing in the new staff, bringing in the new quarterback, trying to spend on key free agents at key spots. They just might be a little bit more advanced, but we still don't know how their quarterback situation is going to work out. I don't think we know enough about Tua. I don't think we learned. It was good that he got to play last year, but I still don't think we know enough about like who he's going to be long-term. If his career develops quickly, like if he is able to take a massive jump here in year two, where he is the starter and offense is built for him, he's able to operate within that offense in ways that he wasn't last year. I mean, I thought it was really interesting, very candid of him to kind of come out and say that like he wasn't able to check in and out of plays, he didn't know the playbook that well, and like how much of that was because he wasn't the starter for most of the year, how much of that was because they were trying to simplify things for him, I'm not exactly clear. But I mean, I don't think Jets fans would get super mad at me if I say I think they're fourth if we're power ranking the AFC East right now, but I think they're going to start closing that gap, and I think the competition, I think they're going to be more competitive, especially with the Dolphins and the Patriots than they were a year ago, maybe a ways to go to catch up to the Bills.
Yeah, no, my like hot take, I guess, is by the end of the year, Zach Wilson will be the second best quarterback in the division. I'm not super high on Tua. I haven't been for a while. My favorite take I've had recently was Herbert was going to be awesome coming out. I'm a diehard USC fan and he tore up USC twice. So
yeah,
I kind of fell into the trap. I guess he landed in a good situation. Couple quick things, obviously, before we finish up here. One situation that's kind of looming over the Jets right now is Elijah Moore is this like stud rookie receiver who's balling out. And then you've got Jameson Crowder, who's one of the five highest paid slot guys in the NFL with no guaranteed money left. What do you do with Crowder? Because I feel like his value is not as high going into contract year. He's a slot guy. He's got a huge contract, so it's going to be harder to move him. But at the same time, the Jets really have the luxury to be moving off of talented offensive players at this point. It's a weird situation. I'm not really sure what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, I mean, especially when that receiver core has been really bad for a really long time. Like they now finally at least
Chris Hogan. Like, oh. He's a professional lacrosse player. He was wide receiver one last year.
Yeah, that's rough. That's really, really rough. So finally, it's like you could maybe look at the Jets and be like, oh, this isn't the worst wide receiver group in the league. But yeah, I mean, it is tricky. I mean, I don't think the Crowder contract was ever a great contract. I don't think he ever fully lived up to it at all. I mean, probably didn't even come close to it. It's tough. I mean, in this time of year, it's like, it's hard to deal those kind of guys. Like if you were going to move on from Jameson Crowder, like you probably needed to have already done that. I mean, they could probably keep dangling him out there up until the trade deadline, which is after Halloween, sometime, you know, early November. I think last year, the trade deadline was actually on Election Day, which was a choice that the NFL made. They could have changed it and they did not. They gave all their employees the day off. They were like told everybody like in the league office, like go vote. It's a league holiday, but everybody who had to actually like pull off the trades. Sorry. That seemed neither here nor there though. I mean, it's going to be a messy situation. It's something that's going to be hanging out there. It's been hanging out there over minicamp when he wasn't around. When you're dealing with this contract thing, like the way that the CBA is structured now, like it's not going to be a holdout situation. Like he can't afford. I mean, if Aaron Rodgers might not be able to afford a holdout, like a Jameson Crowder, probably couldn't deal with it.
You're not Aaron Rodgers either.
Yeah, I mean, so maybe there's some way that they can like shift some money around and give him a little bit more guarantees, or you know, I don't know, but I don't think he's good enough to necessarily warrant like wanting a new deal. So I don't know enough about the intricacies of like what's going on, but I would say the encouraging thing, like if you're looking at this from like a big picture perspective, is that, you know, they have other guys now. Like if you're the Jets, you don't have to say like, well, you know, this guy's unhappy and we're going to have to figure out his contract and stuff. Like you can say, okay, let's focus on Elijah Moore and let's focus on Corey Davis, you know, the guy that you already spent a lot of money on in free agency. Cause all of a sudden that group is not, it's not bad. I mean, it's not terrible. I mean, if you're Sam Darnold, you're probably like, oh, so now you get some receivers.
Now you invest. The Crowder thing, I think there's only three things that happen. Or either they restructure him, they extend him and lower his cap hit, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like next year they just do the same thing over again, or they move him in a guy like it hurts or Hayden Hurst needs to get moved also, and you kind of just like both teams get something that they don't have. I want to finish up with one fun thing, because you guys on your football show did a quarterback for the next 5-year ranking, stuff like that. And
Zach didn't make the cut.
Zach didn't make the cut. It's okay. Although I think Trevor Lawrence is not. Surprisingly, for once, I think there's a situation that might be worse than the Jets have. But Dak, I think Dak, you guys had Dak really high.
Nate Tice took him at number two.
What was your reaction for people who haven't seen? And B, like, I mean, I think I have Dak as a top 8, top 10 guy, and I think that's I think he's actually more disrespected than he should be. But he also makes enough money that he makes, you know. So what was the kind of reaction, or where do you think the thinking was there?
The exercise was picking like the most valuable next 5 years. So it wasn't just for 2021. We were trying to look at independent of situation. So independent of like coaching, independent of who the teammates might be around him, who were the guys that you would want to build around? So if you were saying, okay, I get a quarterback, the two things that stayed that were not like hypotheticals were age and contract. So those were the two things that you had to take into consideration of, okay, like, is this guy 24? So I'm going to have him for ages 24 through 28. Seasons. What are we going to be paying him? What's his going to be his average salary over these 5 years? Is he like a Josh Allen who's about to get paid? So we might have one more cheap year, but then he's going to be making, you know, $35 or $40 million a year moving forward. So those were the parameters. So, you know, I had, when I made my big board, we also didn't do it as a snake draft, because just we thought for like podcasting purposes, same person talking about two picks back to back. So I got really lucky. I ended up with the first pick, which was super obvious. Like, you don't think twice about taking Patrick Mahomes, right? I mean, that's just like, even if he's not going to play out the contract as structured, because nobody's going to play out a 10-year deal.
Be structured like 13 times in a year.
Yeah. I mean, but like, I think it'd be fair to say for the 5 years, you know, he'll probably play for this one on 5 years or whatever, but there's no question that even it, whatever his like $45 million average, exactly what it is, but whatever he's making, like, he's worth it. Like, give him all of the money. It's fine. But yeah, Nate decided to take him at number two, decided to take Dak Prescott at number two, just in terms of like where he's at age-wise, the complete package skill set. So he's more established than the rookies. The rookies are the second year guys. He's a lot younger than the Russell Wilson type of crew. I think we were surprised that Nate didn't take Russell Wilson, because Nate loves Russell Wilson. They were teammates at the University of Wisconsin. Russell Wilson also, I believe he's 32, but you know, at a quarterback, with a quarterback, like, you can take a 32-year-old guy, so kind of going into his, very, very much still in his prime. So yeah, I mean, I think we were surprised mostly because the contract. So there were a lot of other guys out there that are proven, maybe not quite to the extent that Dak is, but that also aren't making, you know, more than $40 million a year already. So when you're talking about value, but I had him pretty high on my board. I wouldn't have taken him first, but I might have, when it circled back around to me at four, I would have thought about it. Yeah.
Yeah. The one last thing I wanted to quickly finish up with here before we let you go. I don't want to get into the legal stuff with Deshaun Watson. I don't know the facts, and I'm not speculating. Yeah. It's not my place. But there was some news this week. Kareem Jackson was on a Keith Lee podcast and mentioned, you know, I've said from the beginning, Miami and New York were the best two options. Denver was a wild card, but didn't feel like it met. Like, Miami's always, for me, going to feel like that's the favorite. And I still think if he gets legal stuff cleared up and Miami gets Deshaun Watson, they're a Super Bowl contender. Which just sucks as a Jets fan, but Denver seems to be like this hot topic of Rodgers and Watson and all these veteran guys, in some sense, as a quarterback. And do you think there's any validity to like Denver making a move on either of these guys? It feels like that would have happened pre-draft, but do you see any of that happening? Because that changes the landscape of the entire AFC with that Denver roster.
Oh, for sure.
If they have either of those guys, I think they're right up there with the Chiefs and the Bills.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to take Watson like just completely out of the discussion or any of the discussions. And like what we just talked about, our athletic football show quarterback draft, we didn't even have Watson on the table because it's just
probably would have gone too based on
yeah, exactly. It's just because there's just way too many unknowns. We don't know if he'll even be active this year, if he'll play this year. He probably will end up on the commissioner's exempt list at some point, just depending on the timing of all of that. So yeah, I mean, but with the Broncos, like they very clearly have an unsettled quarterback situation, and trading for Teddy Bridgewater a couple of days before the draft was not the solution. You know, like it's just a downer. Like, I think, you know, I remember did some radio interviews and stuff that the week of the draft, and it's like, if we're going into mini camp or into training camp, which we now are 6 weeks away from training camp, and the Broncos quarterback competition is Drew Lock versus Teddy Bridgewater, like something's gone wrong. Something hasn't worked out the way that it probably should have. And I've been a little bit higher on Drew Lock than some other people have been. I mean, I think he has been objectively bad. His, you know, statistically objectively bad. I do think there are some redeemable qualities though about him, and the physical tools and stuff have been there. There's been a lot of things that haven't worked out well for him. He's gone through multiple coordinator changes and scheme changes within 2 years. He missed a bunch of time as a rookie with an injury, and that drug out longer than it should have. You know, they waited to activate him off of IR for too long. I mean, there was just a lot of kind of like stuff out there. The issues with him have been his decision-making and that like the processing the offense and those sorts of things that he needs to get better at. I know there's a lot of people within that Broncos building who look at what's happened with Josh Allen in Buffalo as the best case scenario, that if Josh Allen was able to become a more accurate quarterback who also has some pretty undeniable physical tools in terms of arm strength and mobility, that maybe it can happen for Drew Lock. I'm a little afraid that Josh Allen is kind of a unicorn in that regard. I mean, I think the body of evidence of quarterbacks who are inaccurate in college, who never became accurate NFL passers, is very, very large. And the group of guys who have done what Josh Allen has done is very, very small. But like, I get what Vic Fangio is going to really like about Teddy Bridgewater. That like, oh, he's going to play like ball control and you know, he's going to be safe. He's yeah. But like, it's so boring. Like,
that roster is so talented. I mean, I know there's a lot of injuries last year, but like, Courtland Sutton's really good. And like, no one talks about it. Like,
yeah, I mean, because I think he tore his ACL in like week two last year.
Yeah.
But I remember I did go out to training camp a couple times last year during like the COVID protocols and stuff. And like Jerry Jeudy was destroying people in training camp. Like
his burst is crazy.
So like, yeah. And like he had a couple bad drop games as a rookie, but like Jerry Jeudy, really freaking good. Courtland Sutton was a Pro Bowler in 2019 before he got injured. He's really, really good. And I remember him at training camp a couple years ago, just like making like legit good defensive backs look like really silly. Noah Fant, really good young tight end. They finally have an offensive line that is not a complete question mark. Right tackle still is an issue for them. They lost Juwan James in the big offseason issue where he tore his Achilles working out away from the facility. But yeah, I mean, the roster is really good. So there's a lot to kind of like there. Their defensive roster is really, really good. But they just don't have the quarterback answer. And it's similar to what I was saying about the Jets and playing in a division where you have one of the best teams. The Broncos are in a really rough situation where you're playing two times a year against arguably the best team in football. And they have gotten further away from the Chiefs in the last 5 years, then, you know, their games against Kansas City last year, they were not getting closer. It was getting more and more and more lopsided. And, you know, so that's why when they drafted Patrick Surtain, you think like, okay, is this designed because now we have all these defensive possibilities and maybe we're going to, you know, match up better when we have to, you know, you're trying to think of like how George Payton and Vic Fangio are saying this, like, okay, we've got a guy now that maybe can cover Travis Kelce, or we'll have more guys that we can match up when Tyreek, we can put somebody on Tyreek and somebody on. Great. That's fine. But does that make you any more capable of like keeping up with the Chiefs and like scoring enough points and like making up ground in that division? And that's what I'm not you know, I'm not so sure of. And that's why everybody here is just like out of their minds excited about the possibility that Aaron Rodgers could be available. I think it's a little, I don't want people to get too excited and thinking it's going to happen, because I don't think it's going to happen. But it is like, it is radio gold. And my buddies who work in sports talk radio are,
just in the same spot 2 months ago. And it was like, do they trade 2 and 23 for Deshaun and the whole 9 yards? But no, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Like that division too. It's like, you know, Derek Carr and Herbert are not, you know, like the Broncos are the only team in that division without their quarterback. Obviously, we can, the Raiders or whatever.
I mean, I don't know what the Raiders like long-term quarterback.
Yeah, long-term, I don't know. But
plan Herbert's thing is going to be there. They've kind of been in those trade, you know, rumors for trades. But yeah, I mean, if I'm those, I mean, if I'm the Broncos, I'm looking at like, we got to play Mahomes and Herbert now twice a year, like,
they're both like 4 year
games. Like that's, I mean, Herbert is really, really freaking good. I don't want to get too excited about the Chargers, because it always, we always do this time of year. And then by August, like
lose
half of their
six
guys
games
are on IR.
By a field goal or miss an extra point.
But I am very intrigued by them, and, you know, just seeing kind of like, I think their ceiling is now really, really high.
Yeah, no, that's the goal, I guess, right, for the Jets is, you know, at the end of the day, wrap here is just, you know, obviously for Zach Wilson, I have Justin Herbert's rookie year next. I mean, if he has that, that's insane, but it's not even, it's just for them to be able to, Jets going the next offseason, we're talking the same exact time next year. Now it's like their expectation is they should compete within a division, and you have your quarterback, you have a coach, and at least you can build around that. So obviously we really appreciate you coming on. Make sure, again, you're following Twitter, obviously, you know, the NFL Athletic Show, subscribe to The Athletic. I do. You're going to get a lot of great content, whether it's Jet stuff, NFL stuff as a whole. They have great baseball, basketball, soccer, if that's what you're into as well. No, we really appreciate having you on, and hopefully an exciting season. And, you know, we'll get to, maybe the Broncos will figure out a quarterback, and the Jets will too, and we'll be able to talk about it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much for having me on. I'm glad we were finally able to coordinate a time to do this.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And
my puppy stayed asleep the whole time we recorded.
Yeah, we got
some
lucky.
Sort of miracle.
We got really lucky. We had no distractions. It's great. But we appreciate coming on, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.